Hello, and welcome to Rabble Radio. It's Friday, March 4th, 2022. I'm your host, Brianne Doyle. Thanks for tuning in. Rabble's got its finger on the beat of the issues that matter to you. If you're curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labor, environment, or social justice, you've come to the right place. This week at Rabble, we share analysis of the Russian invasion in Ukraine and the new proposed minimum wage announced for Ontario gig workers. We'll cover all that and more a bit later on our show. First, Libby Davies interviews Sophie Harkat, wife of Mohammed Harkat. Mohammed Harkat's case has been before the courts for almost two decades now. Mohammed Harkat, originally from Algeria, has been living in Canada since 1995. In 1997, he was given refugee status after successfully claiming government persecution if he were to return to Algeria. In December of 2002, he had a job as a pizza delivery man in Ottawa when he was taken into custody suspected of being an Al-Qaeda sleeper agent. Although he denied any involvement with terrorism, he was arrested on a national security certificate and deemed to be a threat to national security. He spent one full year of his 3.5-year detention in solitary confinement. In June of 2006, he was released on bail with some of the strictest conditions in Canadian history. Because he has still not been proven innocent or cleared of any charges, his work, travel, and personal life are under heavy surveillance. The Harkats continue to fight for his freedom to this day. Sophie Harkat has traveled extensively across the country and the UK to talk about security certificates and granted hundreds of interviews with reporters from around the world about her husband's case. She has been a guest speaker at various universities and conferences for the past 21 years. Sophie is determined to fight until justice prevails, her husband is cleared of all allegations, and security certificates are abolished. Libby Davies is the author of Outside In, a political memoir. She served as the MP for Vancouver East from 1997 to 2015 and is a former NDP deputy leader and house leader. Libby's also a recipient of the Order of Canada. Here are Libby and Sophie in conversation. Take a listen.
Well, good afternoon, Sophie. It's so wonderful to be able to have this conversation with you. I don't know that we've ever really properly met in person, but I feel like over the years, you and I have connected on the situation, the travesty that's been facing your husband, Mohammed. And so I feel like I know you. And so I really welcome this opportunity to have a conversation with you about what this whole experience has been like for you for, what is it now, almost 20 years. So I want to begin actually with just asking you, how did you meet Mo and when? How did you guys get together?
I met my husband and actually in a kind of cute way. I was on a really bad blind date and it was obvious that the guy who was picking me up, he didn't like what he saw that night. He seemed super disappointed, although I was brutally honest about my shape and my size and everything. And so when I got into the car, he suggested we go to Dairy Queen for supper instead of like the regular restaurant we had planned to go. And I was like, you know, we can still have a nice conversation. We're two adults here. We don't need to go further. We can just be friends. But he kept changing his mind and he kept really looking up and down. So I got really fed up and I came out of the car and the guy said to me, come back. I'll have a second look at you. So I got really upset and I told him, I said, if you're single for such a long time, that's the reason why. Because if you look at every woman the way you look at me today, you're going to stay single for a really long time. And so I went to the corner store who happens to be behind my house, and I don't do drugs. I don't drink alcohol, but I did drink a lot of Diet Coke at the time. So I went to buy Diet Coke and Mo was behind the cash. So he had big brown eyes and perfect chin and chiseled nose. And I thought he was really cute and friendly. Over the couple of months, he saw me and eventually he asked me out. And one night I actually sent my mom over to the gas station to check him out to see if I should go on a date with him. And when he picked me up on our first date, my sister said, she peeked through the door and she said, "Oh, he's really cute, but he's really short." And I said, "What do you mean he's really short?" She said, "Yeah, he's really short." What I didn't know is that he was standing on a step stool behind the cash. So there was a big portion of him that happened to be missing when he picked me up on our first date. And then it was history from there.
What a beautiful romantic story to your journey. So thank you for sharing that. It's lovely to hear. Well, I think we should kind of switch tack for a moment here. And I think for our listeners, to just bring people up to date briefly about where things stand legally for Mo. I think a lot of people have followed the story and just been horrified about Canada's treatment of Mo under their security certificates and everything that's taken place. But if you could just briefly bring us up to date on where things stand now.
You know, Libby, it's been such a long time. Like, I used to be really good with dates and time. And it's at one point, you just want to kind of move on with life and you kind of go through the process, but then you don't pay as much attention. The past couple of years, my husband and I had tried to move on, have normal lives, get full-time jobs. But you know, this every aspect of your life is affected by this. Like just applying for a job, having your name on the resume affects, you know, affects everything. And so we were trying to move on. He lost his certificate. If I remember well, it was in 2014 and the deportation process started. CBSA filed a review and made a report that he should be deported back to Algeria because if he stayed in Canada, Canadians would face a bigger risk if he were to stay. They didn't take in consideration the allegations that he had on his shoulders going back there, the fact that he hasn't gone there since he's 19 years old, the fact that he goes back with allegations that have not been, you know, we didn't have a chance to cross-examine anything in court. We don't, you know, the informant failed the lie detector test in our case. Evidence has been destroyed.
The last that I read is that your lawyer or his lawyer, Barbara Jackman, filed for a judicial review in 2018.
That's right.
So, you know, 3 years ago, and now you guys are still awaiting information from the federal government to back up their claim. So things seem to be sort of in limbo. That's what I was able to read online. I can't imagine what it must be like just to kind of have this uncertainty. But is Mo the only Canadian now who is being detained under the security certificate? Is he the others have been resolved? There were five originally. Is he the only one remaining?
Well, let's be clear, Libby, he's not a Canadian, he's a refugee, because no Canadians would be affected by security certificates. Those are specifically targets to refugees, non-status, landed immigrants, just so that the public understands that Canadians are not targeted by the certificate. And I'm so grateful for Barb Jackman. After Mo lost his decision, she was the first call I made. And I called crying, begging her to take on this case because she's one of the best immigration lawyers in this country. And it's been dragging on. And I also have to say that they reinstated special advocates in this process because we have to go back and cross-examine some of the secret evidence. So they reinstated our former advocate, Paul Cavalluzzo, and one of his junior counsel in his office. So that was another process that we had to go through, reinstate special advocates for this process. So it's been dragging, unfortunately. I'm happy for the other three men who have been successful, but the case of Mr. Majoub is also dragging. He's not as far in the process as us. And I believe that his bail conditions are actually harsher than ours. We managed to go for one bail review since, but it was a nightmare. It dragged for 2 years. It took almost a year to have a decision. And the decision was a complete failure. It was a biggest disappointment. We barely had changes. They gave us, like, for example, an extension of 2 days to 5 days of travel without having to get pre-approval or advise CBSA. Very, very minor thing. The conditions around the computer and the cell phone are actually tougher than they were before. So we went backwards on those, especially around his work. For example, he's trying to use a cell phone at work. And there's so many conditions related to that, like they need to monitor it and all that and listen to the conversations and the phone numbers. So you lose the whole privacy issue when it, even including his workplace. So these are the little things that people don't think of, but, you know, technology is used every day and affects your everyday life. So it's been a huge struggle. Having Mo, getting a cell phone for Mo took several weeks of back and forth because he couldn't pick his own cell phone. They had a list of cell phones he could pick from. They don't pay for the cell phone. They don't pay for the plan, but they have all these extra, very complicated conditions. I feel like the bail is always drafted in order for Mo to fail at his conditions. It's so complicated that we feel stressed all the time about using technology because, you know, your finger can slip or you can, you know, your phone could be at the bottom of the car in your pocket and dial something and there's a record of it. And it's just little simple things, but using technology is actually very stressful. And he is being monitored regularly. So his cell phone is supposed to be monitored every couple of weeks. They actually extended because they realized he doesn't use his cell phone very often, but for fear of using his cell phone as well, for making errors and having breaches. So it's very stressful. And his computer gets monitored. And then he has to report in person once a month. So next week he'll be reporting in person as of the Wednesday. He has quite a bit of contact with CBSA and CBSA continues to monitor Mo. They park in the street behind our unit. They drive around our corporation. I feel completely harassed. I'm at the point, Libby, where I'm turned off by this government. I'm turned off by certain types of vehicle that look like CBSA cars. It's really sad. It's really sad to say, like I was affected by that. I was affected by the sound of closing car doors, doorbells, because that reminds me of CBSA coming to pick up my husband, CBSA coming in for, a breach, CBSA coming in because the bracelet was ringing, for all kinds of reasons.
It's really amazing that you can share this information to give people a glimpse of what your typical and daily life is like, because, you know, we all take technology, our cell phones, our Facebook, our social media for granted. We use it as a method of communication and staying in contact. And yet to have this weight and this shadow overlooking you every moment of every day just must be unbelievable. And yet, you know, what I find is that somehow you guys manage to find humor. You know, I love your Facebook posts where you give these little narratives of what Mo said and what you said, you know, when you asked him to go out and get something or he says something that's a little bit unusual. So it's really magical that you also find a way to express the humor and the love that you have despite this unbelievable weight that you have over both of you.
Everybody that meets Mo falls in love with him. He's very funny, actually. He's very sweet. He's a little bit shy. So he's completely the opposite of what they describe him to be in those court documents. Is a complete opposite. He is so non-threatening when you meet him. First of all, he's, you know, short. He's, like I said, he's a little bit shy. He's a bit conservative and he's nothing like what they describe in those documents. Absolutely nothing. I remember meeting, I forget which NDP member we had met during a lobby session. And he said, is this what you call a threat to national security? And we said, yeah, he's a threat to national security. And NDP MP went, woo, I'm so scared. Mm-hmm. Such a great moment.
And how do you manage to cope, Sophie? What kind of support system do you have to get through what I'm sure must be moments, days, times where it feels really rough, just as you've described to us?
I feel my patience is running out. I'm really running out of patience for injustice. I'm really lucky. I have a good mom. I have a good stepdad. I have a really good family. We have a great committee. We haven't met in a long time, but we have the most amazing supporters. That's been the most amazing side of it. I like who I've become. I like who the friends I've made. I've loved the events that I've attended. It's changed my life for the better, to be honest. Like, it's made me such a better person. It's woken me up. It opened my eyes to injustice, to all kinds of things. I wouldn't turn back in a sense that I feel I've become a better person because of it. And I wouldn't go back because of all the people that I've met and all the great friends I have. We're very lucky. Extremely lucky. So we have a committee meeting this Friday. We haven't met in about 3 years. And the majority of my committee members are in their 80s, just so you know. And half of them are raging grannies. And how can you not feel good when you're around people like that, honestly? And I also kind of a person that has positive attitude overall. I'm the opposite of my husband. I still believe that justice will prevail eventually. It might take time. It might take everything, every energy out of me and might suck it up. I might die from the stress that this is causing, but I feel there's a purpose behind this. I feel we're setting precedents. I feel it's very important. It's not just our battle. It's a battle for a lot of people. And I get to share this experience with amazing people.
Well, it's certainly a legal battle against the system of security certificates, the lack of disclosure, the fact that the special advocates can't even share all the information with the person being accused, that Mo doesn't even know what it is that's against him. It's a terrible system. I mean, I was in Parliament when, you know, the so-called anti-terrorism legislation was rushed through, and it was rushed through. It was a frantic period, and it was ill thought out, and it was not needed. And so we're living still with the consequences of this kind of legislation and how it impacts people's lives. So
the other thing is, you know, it affects these men, but it goes further than that. It affects their families, the people that the people they're friends with. It affects everybody in the circle. So it's not just a law that affects landed immigrants and refugees. It's a law that affects everyone. My life was turned upside down. We didn't have children because of that. I've had miscarriages because of this. We've postponed stuff in life. My health is deteriorating. Mo was recently diagnosed with post polio syndrome. And so he can barely walk now. And the stress has actually made has worsened his symptoms.
And what are the restrictions on him now? He is employed. He is able to go to work, but he still has very severe daily restrictions on his life. Could you describe that for us a little bit?
Well, unfortunately, due to his polio, he stopped working after Christmas. And we're hoping he's going to get surgery and get somewhat better. So his computer is monitored. His cell phone is monitored. He has to report once a month. Our travel is restricted. The people he associates with, there's still too much presence in our life. And CBSA can come at our house and they can monitor around our neighborhood. There's too much presence in our lives after more than 16 years. He's been out since 2006. He was released in June of 2006. So I feel he's proven himself. And you ask me, I don't believe he should have had conditions from the start. If we look at what we had before and what we have now, we cannot compare. I was literally a prisoner and a jailer to my own husband for 3.5 years. I was under house arrest with him for 3.5 years. Had to let go of my good government job to supervise him. I've made a lot of sacrifices for that, a lot of sacrifices for freedom in this country. And at the same time, as we were happy to release those men, we also set dangerous precedents for bail reviews for the other people immigrating to this country to prove that these conditions, yeah, they're worth using. Because see, we have these 5 men that we've been able to use these conditions on. So that was kind of like the price of freedom. Either you choose a GPS and the house arrest and this and this and that, or you stay in jail. I mean, who would even consider leaving a loved one in prison? However, I felt at the same time that we set a really dangerous precedence for the future.
I think a lot of Canadians are under the illusion that we live in this, you know, wonderful society and everything is fair and equitable. But to hear about Mo's situation and what you've both had to go through, I think really, you know, destroys that illusion and shows us that the state can insert itself into your life in such a negative and strong way that, I think you both must be incredibly strong people to be able to keep going.
We have each other. I have to say we have some hard days. Mo, it's tougher for Mo than it is for me because I have a very positive attitude. But like, for example, where were all those convoy trucks and people when we were actually fighting for my husband's freedom? Where were they? Yep. We're fighting for vaccine and mask right now when people's lives are at risk. I mean, it really makes you think what freedom is really all about, puts it into perspective. For me, it's total insult. Yeah, because people are seeking real justice and real freedom.
What do you think is the most important thing for our listeners to know? What can we do to support you?
Well, you know, there's the film that we did a few years ago called The Secret Trial 5, which is a great documentary. If you want to watch it online, it's available. Talk to your MP, talk to your friends, talk about this. Go on our website, justiceforharcat.com. There's a petition you can sign. We hope to bring it forward at the court as we're heading to the Ontario Superior Court to challenge the bail conditions. We hope to have them lifted completely. That would be life-changing for us. If we could go through the deportation process without having ongoing conditions, that would be a huge burden taken off of our shoulders. we could probably feel like we could breathe for the first time in many, many, many years. So sign the petition so we can, you know, hopefully present it at the court. And if you feel like donating, we could, this battle has lasted for several years. A lot of the legal fees come out of our own pocket. It's a very costly battle. It's an important one, not just for Mo, but for a lot of people. We're changing the law, we're setting precedents, and it's also important for the future. I think we've managed to win in a way that government no longer reissues security certificates. They're very costly. People don't like them. They think they're unfair. We challenge them. So, but there's another act under the immigration that they use. However, the process is not as expensive and not as long. And also, I like to remind Canadians, if you question security certificate, just put yourself in Mo's shoes and just ask yourself, if it was me and I would be able to defend myself, I wouldn't be able to see the evidence, would I accept that for myself? And I think the majority of Canadians would agree that no. Does it matter where you come from? If you don't agree with the process for yourself, nobody should be able to be arrested under that process. We always said it's like a criminal case, put the evidence forward and we will defend him fairly and openly. That's what we've been asking from the beginning. We never asked him to be released immediately. We said, give us a fair trial. Give us a criminal process with evidence, cross-examination, you know, documents that are not blocked off. I think anybody would say the same.
Absolutely. Do you have advocates and champions in Parliament who are raising this issue on your behalf that you're in contact with that are keeping the pressure up?
We did a while ago. We haven't lobbied in quite some time, and we did file an application in front of the minister. Our application was filed in front of Goodale. That's how long it's been sitting in the Liberals' office. They could just sign that paper and we could all end. I hope that we have a resolution in both, so just so we can have a peace of mind and have a peaceful life. As this is going forward, we're getting older. I don't want to die with that weight on my shoulders, but you know, I hope to have a peaceful resolution on both ends. But the Liberals could have ended this a very, very, very long time ago. And I'm thankful for the MPs that stood up for us in Parliament, who signed our petition. I feel we still have a lot of work to do. At the same time, it's been exhausting to work on these cases. And over the years, you feel like you just want to move on with your life, try to live as normal as possible, which is not possible. But, you know, I don't want it to ruin every day of my life.
I want to thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today and to wish you both all the best and hope that 2022 is going to be a year where you can see some relief and you can get on with your lives as you should be able to.
We wish that every year, even at Christmas, every year we wish we make that wish. I really hope for a resolution soon, just for my husband's sake and for his health. I'm very grateful for the Canadians who stood up for us, who signed our petitions, who've been there for us since the beginning. I hope that you have discussions, you know, because they say if you don't do something now, it will come bite you in the butt later.
That was Libby Davies in conversation with Sophie Harkat. Thanks so much for that, Libby and Sophie. Now it's time for a segment we call In Case You Missed It. This week, Rabble.ca continued its coverage and analysis on Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Carl Nirenberg debates how likely it is that Putin will resort to nuclear weapons during this invasion of Ukraine. From the outset, Nirenberg writes, Putin hasn't bothered to veil his threat to resort to nuclear weapons. He has been blunt and unambiguous, and this isn't something the West should take lightly. He writes, during the Cold War, a strategic theory of peace through nuclear deterrence was defined as MAD, or M-A-D, standing for Mutually Assured Destruction. The idea was that each side is capable of destroying the other, which would create a balance of terror and dissuade each side from taking the first step toward war. Cold War theorists such as Hermann Kahn postulated that nuclear weapons would render war unwinnable, ergo unthinkable, ergo obsolete, Nirenberg explains. But if there's one major flaw to the MAD theory, is that it assumes world leaders will be rational actors. Putin continuously flaunts his nuclear power, and this proves we cannot rely on that assumption. Meanwhile, Thomas Woodley examines the jarring double standard in Canada's response to the Ukraine invasion. As Woodley reports, within hours of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the Trudeau government had condemned Russia's unprovoked actions as another clear and further violation of Ukraine's sovereignty, territorial integrity, and independence. Compare this, Woodley says, to Canada's reaction to brutal Israeli military action against Palestinians in 2008, 2014, 2018, 2020, and 2021, where Israel is, at most, asked to show restraint as it bombs Gaza. Woodley says, with the conflict over Ukraine, Canadian leaders may well be right to cite lofty principles of democracy, independence, human rights, and humanitarianism. Yet their comments ring hollow when such principles are invoked selectively against Canada's adversaries and ignored when the aggressors are our friends. Libby Davies attended an emergency online Code Pink conference over the weekend in response to Russia's attack on Ukraine. Code Pink's international emergency online rally was organized with the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament, the Stop the War Coalition, and the No to NATO Network. The conference concluded in a call for a global day of action and protest for this Sunday, March 6, against the Russian invasion and against further military involvement. Also on the site this week, don't be fooled by Ontario's recently announced plan to guarantee a minimum wage of $15 per hour for gig workers, Jim Stanford writes. It may sound good, but there are some big devils lurking in the details. The biggest problem is that the so-called minimum wage will only apply for time gig workers spend engaged on an assignment, driving a passenger, delivering a meal, or performing some other assigned task. But gig workers regularly spend a great deal of time, often over half of their workday, waiting for those assigned fares and tasks, or traveling back to central hubs after completing a task. This unpaid time is excluded from this new minimum wage, with enormous effects. Make no mistake, Stanford writes. This approach to regulating gig work will do absolutely nothing for gig workers. It is all about a government preparing to fight an election, wanting to pose as supporting worker rights. You can find all of these stories and much, much more on rabble.ca. And lastly, don't miss it. Our next Off the Hill panel is happening next week, March 10th, 2022, at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 4:30 Pacific. This month's theme is Off the Hill, in the Extreme. Register for this free event today on the site, on our Facebook page, or with the link in our newsletter. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever podcast app you use. Follow us on social media across channels at RabbleCA. Thank you to Libby Davies and Sophie Harkat for their interview this week. Thank you to Carl for supplying the music for the show. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on Rabble.ca. And lastly, thank you to you for listening to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week.